Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, off and running on a Wednesday evening. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Inside Jaguars Central, Brian Sexton, John Osher, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato. Phone lines is always open to you this evening. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Call before the storm. Draft 3 weeks from tomorrow night.
I thought the storm was 2 weeks ago.
The next one. You think they stop?
No.
How long were you in Indiana?
The storm's not stop. 10 years.
Yeah, they keep coming down here, baby.
By the way, the NFL draft is 22 days, 1 hour, 51 minutes, and now 36 seconds away.
And it's going to be a...
Are you one of those guys that watches that?
I just, though.
You know those people watching.
Well, I happen to go to NFL.com/draft2012, you know, their website, yeah, which they've got up. And, you know, they've got the mock drafts and everything going. They got the countdown to the 2012 NFL draft clock.
Do you know, if you go to Google and just type in 2012, the second thing that pops up after 2012 is 2012 NFL mock draft.
Really?
That goes to show you how pervasive it is. Now, they may have some good SEO, search engine optimization guys there, but it is a huge deal.
It's a big deal, and it should be. I mean, the draft represents, for so many years, hope in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's always been. And obviously, that changed a lot back in the early 90s when you had, you know, the creation of free agency. So, I mean, football has become a year-round sport. And I go back to that moment in the locker room, and I remember it like it was yesterday. And Bruce Cosett was the head coach of the New York Jets, and I'm sitting on the training table in the offseason, and he was telling me that free agency will never happen. And I said, Bruce, I said, free agency is coming. And I said, and when it does, I said, the NFL will become a year-round sport. I said, because for so many years, when the NFL season ended, there was nothing until the draft. But when the draft started up, that really, I guess, was the beginning of the NFL season, because that's what gave the fans hope.
I can remember when the schedule was hard to find. Remember? I mean, you know, when you get excited about the schedule coming out. And
it'd be in the newspaper once, and then you'd have to wait to find it again.
You wouldn't quite know who was on the teams. You know, I mean, I'm waxing nostalgic, but you'd get the magazines, and they'd usually be sort of wrong, but you'd still be excited about it.
Yeah, now here we are.
Every day. Yeah, every day.
Beginning of April.
You have everything.
And we're excited about the preseason opponents being announced, and we haven't even gotten the dates yet.
Maybe the biggest, I say stroke of genius, but the most amazing thing the NFL has done is the way they have laid out the schedule to where there is literally maybe 3.5, 4 weeks in July and, you know, June.
Where it's quiet.
Where it's not a topic. And it's just, it's amazing how it plays out. And it, you know, somebody made the point on my Twitter timeline that it shows you what a big deal it is when the unveiling of very similar uniforms to last year is on the front page of USA Today.
Front page of USA Today.
Really, the change is there's a swoosh, but it's
maybe a little fabric, and that's about it.
Right, but it's, you know, but it shows you it's a dominant topic. And as far as the draft, I think the next 3 weeks are going to be fascinating for the Jaguars. You know, people analyzing the Jaguars draft, because there is not a real feel at all for which direction they're going to go. I mean, it is intriguing. There are, for every guy you bring up, there's a million reasons why you don't take him and a million reasons why you do. So it's going to be fascinating.
Well, let's stay on the topic for a moment. Last week we talked at length, and you were returning from the meeting, so Tony and Jeff talked at length about Tannehill and what his workout would mean, and how it would impact the Jaguars if someone would go up ahead and then push what appears to be a trio of Trent Richardson, the running back from Alabama, Justin Blackmon, the wide receiver from Oklahoma State, and Morris Claiborne, the cornerback from LSU, down a notch. All right. Now, last week, Todd McShay from ESPN had the Jaguars selecting, it's a mock draft, I know, Riley Wright, the big offensive tackle from Iowa. And today, version 4 from Mel Kiper has the Jaguars taking, and this is a popular one, Melvin Ingram, the defensive end from South Carolina. So you're right. I mean, nobody really knows quite. It seems like there are six players in this draft, and the Jaguars are picking 7. 6 in terms of those top-end guys.
Yeah, and I don't think there's quite, you know, that's a big topic, you know, among observers and analysts right now. I'm not sure that there's as big a difference in some of those guys that are the six and the guys the Jaguars are going to have.
Well, Jeff will make that case in just a moment.
Have a chance to get. I mean, everybody's talking Floyd's a lock in the top six. I mean, not Floyd, but Blackman's a lock in the top six. I don't know that there's a mammoth difference between Blackman and the rest of the receivers.
Right.
But the perception is certainly that there's six in the rest. Usually the way it plays out once these guys get into the league is those sorts of perceptions are pre-draft perceptions only. But, you know, we'll see.
Well, and the unknown also within the top ten, you know, there's so much debate. You know, we had talked a couple weeks ago about the devaluing of the running back position.
Right.
You know, and 10 years ago, it wouldn't even be a debate that Trent Richardson from Alabama would be one of the top five picks.
Right.
But now with the way the league is, so now you've got, you know, has the running back position become devalued that much to where he's not, you know,
well, what year
not
was
gonna
it?
Be in there?
I think he's gonna wind up being that rare guy in this era that can outperform, out talent that devalued. Overall, there's no question the running back position is not as important as it was.
Well, you got him, and then you also have
special.
You know, the Ryan Tannehill deal. Will he push up? But, you know, from the Jaguars standpoint, you want him to push up, but you don't want him to push up too much.
Yeah, there's actually, I mean, it's positive. If he pushes up to where he's right around six or seven, then it's great because they can trade. If he pushes up higher than that, at least it pushes everybody else down and gives him a chance at a better player. So it's
but what you would like to have in a perfect world, you know, in the vacuum that Tony Boselli was referring to last week.
You missed it.
You missed that, John.
I'll have to get it on tape.
In the perfect world is that you want him to be there when you're selecting and the team really wants him.
Sure.
Right.
I mean,
sure.
That's the perfect world.
Well, here's how fast it's changed. 2005, two running backs were taken in the top five. Cadillac Williams was taken by the Buccaneers, and Ronnie Brown was taken by the Miami Dolphins.
Which may have been the draft that sort of shifted the tide.
Yeah.
When people, I mean, it's just not.
Or a couple guys from Auburn playing words there.
Unless you guys, unless a guy is just a difference maker, and, you know, frankly, I'm not a big believer that there's a running back that is that difference maker. Even Adrian Peterson, I'm not a big believer, you know, was worth a top five, top seven pick based on what has happened to the franchise since they got him.
But
there are people who think this kid is really, really special, so he's going to go in the top five or six.
But if you could pick a running back in NFL history that would no doubt be a top five selection and would never get devalued, who would that be? I've got a name in mind.
Emmitt Smith.
Marshall Faulk.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, Marshall Faulk.
Oh, because of his multiple.
Absolutely.
Because he was more than a running back.
I mean, he was a running back. He was a receiver. He was a blocker. He could do everything. And that's, you know, listening to Mike Mayock, who I have great respect for the job that he does, NFL Network and stuff. You know, he claims that Trent Richardson can do all of that. But is he really?
If he can play receiver.
Does he look like Marshall Faulk to me? Nah, not quite.
He looks to me like playing more of an Adrian Peterson role where you expect him to be just a dynamic. I can remember seeing Adrian Peterson, I think, first or second year, and thinking this guy is that rare NFL back who's a man among boys in the NFL at times when he runs, and that's rare. And they say that Richardson has a chance to be that, and if that's the case, maybe you go top 10. But, you know, running back in this day and age, top 10 is just, you know, you wonder if you get the production out of it.
All right. Well, look, we've got a lot to talk about this evening. We'll go over the Jaguars preseason schedule. We'll continue talking about the draft. Also, the players are back this week. We'll talk a little bit about that. And this portion of Jaguars This Week has been brought to you by Football Fanatics. We're back after this on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Joe Fortunato here. We're just talking a little bit about the draft. If you haven't seen or heard, Jaguars will play the Giants at home, travel to New Orleans and Baltimore in back-to-back weeks, and then finish the home preseason schedule against the Atlanta Falcons. Dates, times, all of that to be determined. But Giants at New Orleans, at Baltimore, and Falcons at home.
If you like preseason games, it's heck of a
schedule.
It's
better than that.
I mean,
crabcakes and
I wonder if Jaguars' new owner, Shad Khan, said, hey, you know, look, we need some excitement in the preseason because, I mean, do you have any more exciting storylines than what you've got in this preseason schedule? I mean, you've got the Super Bowl champs coming in at the very beginning, and then you go to Bounty Gate in New Orleans.
Right.
And then you turn around and go to the Baltimore Ravens, which is, you know, that's a hot team that has
crab cakes.
The self-proclaimed best quarterback in the league. Right. Came out and said he thinks he's the best.
When you got Mojo and Ray Rice, I mean, you know, you've got some storylines if you're trying to write it or talk about it. So.
And then the Atlanta Falcons, obviously a big connection there with Mike Mularkey, now the head coach here in Jacksonville. I mean, it doesn't get any better than
hopefully it'll be fun. You know how preseason gets. By the time you get to the third game, you're like, is this thing
going to be fun? Well,
I'm kind of
digging
it. Today you get excited. Because it's preseason, but it'll be better than most preseason.
Today it feels fun because we're a long way away. How long until the schedule comes out? Is that the Tuesday, the week before the draft?
Mid-April, I mean, it's usually
two.
Mid
never
to
a set date,
20,
though.
Right.
It's always, you know, it's always kind of fluid.
It's kind of, though, becoming more of it. Well, it's fluid because obviously they had to go to the owners' meetings to approve it, and they've got to work through some different things. But it's become a NFL Network,
right?
You know,
right. What has
unveiling?
Right,
yeah, right,
right. It's another, you know, it's another way for them to be the front page story, which they're masters at, as we talked about.
All right, back to the draft because that's what everyone wants to talk about. And if you got a thought, 355 NFL 1-800-355-6351. Let's talk. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we were talking during the break, and it's a question I get a lot. And the big name out there is Melvin Ingram, right? You know, well, one of the big names. And, Jeff, you had some thoughts that I, not having played, can't really explain. But why he's not necessarily a lock for a top 10 guy?
Because he is a guy that does a lot of things good, but he doesn't really have a position that he does great.
Certainly pass rushing end is not his place.
You know, and he kind of reminds me a little bit of the the defensive end / linebacker that came out of Georgia a while ago that had the neck injury in Cincinnati.
Oh.
David.
Drawing a blank.
I can see him.
I'm drawing a blank.
White kid? I can see him.
We'll think of it in a minute. Sure. But when he came out, everybody was trying to figure out exactly what role that he would have. Would he be a linebacker? Would he be, you know, hand down on the ground type of player? And he was a phenomenal player at Georgia.
Right.
I mean, one heck of a football player at the college level. But I don't know if injuries so much precluded his success at the NFL level, but I think it was more
injuries,
of a position.
Yeah.
I mean, that obviously had a big impact. But even before the injury happened to his neck, he never really looked comfortable in the role that he played in Cincinnati.
What I've been told on Ingram is that if you had him on your team, you would never be sorry he was on your team. Mm-hmm. But if you had him on your team as a number 7 pick, then you might have thought – boy, we're just not quite getting what we wanted out of this in terms of an impact guy who's going to change the dynamics of your team. And that's the dilemma with them.
David Pollack.
That's
David
it.
David Pollack.
David
I knew
Pollack.
It was David.
Yep.
Had that far right.
Got it right.
Forgot all about that one.
So, to me, I think if you're a top 10 pick, you've got to be an elite-level performer at your position or an elite-level performer at your position and another, like a returner. Guy who's a cornerback and a, you know, top-notch returner, something of that nature. But now Melvin Ingram, you know, middle of the first round, you know, sure, absolutely.
And the second question I can't answer because having never played, you know, from now until the draft, you're going to hear about Melvin Ingram's arms. Why does that matter?
Well, most of your tackles and pass protection are typically a 37, 38, 39-inch sleeve length. Mm-hmm. If you don't have long arms like an Elvis Dumervil or a Dwight Freeney, you have to have something that's special,
right,
that makes you overcome the ability to keep separation and distance from the guy.
Freeney's arms are longer than Ingram's, by the way. But
Ingram's are 31.4.
Yeah.
That's pretty short.
Which I'm told is
very short,
is very short.
I mean,
for a guy trying to rush the pass.
I've got a 37.5-inch sleeve length.
Right.
That'll give you an idea.
Well, and I've never played the game. I got a 35.5. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy.
So we're talking about T-Rex.
Really? Yeah. Right.
But I think sometimes, you know, I've answered that question many times, and I always get questions back, oh, who cares if he got short arms? He can play. But there are certain measurables at certain positions that matter.
Sure.
And you're telling me that's one of them at defensive end.
Well, it matters. But if he had something else, you know, a gigantic quick first step or elite power, you know, then – that could overcome some other type of number deficiency.
Well, here's, you know, I'm in the pay area of ESPN, and Scouts Inc. does these evaluations. Here's what they say, and they rank it. 1 is exceptional, 2 is above average, 3 is average, 4 is below average, 5 is marginal. Height, weight, speed, he's a 3, which is average. Quote, short, squatty frame. does not look the part, has short arms and average-sized hands. Top end speed is above average, and 10-yard split is outstanding. So,
I'm told he was a really good pass rusher against okay college tackles, but it's hard to see him translating physically into a guy who can be a big-time pass rusher against NFL tackles, and that's what you've got to have in the top 10.
Now the guy that intrigues me more than any other pass rusher, obviously the kid out of North Carolina, Quentin Copels, has the size, the numbers that you go, yeah, wow, that's Julius Peppers like.
He'll be interesting to watch somewhere.
Yeah, to see if if he can develop. Not sure if he's going to be a candidate for here, but the one that I think is interesting to me is Whitney Mercilus. Did I say that last name?
I believe so.
Kid from.
He's long, he's lean, he's not big, but he's got super speed. He's long-armed. I mean, he's had phenomenal numbers as a senior. Mm-hmm. But the only question mark with him is it wasn't numbers back-to-back years in college. You know, so was he a flash in the pan? Was, this finally a guy just kind of developed like the guy for the Giants?
Jason Pierre-Paul,
who everybody's like, well, he doesn't have a track record. Well, he didn't have a track record, but he had talent.
His height, weight, speed is a 2. It says looks the part, whereas Melvin Ingram said doesn't look the part.
Right.
Good frame for a 4-3 defensive end, long arms, well-built, top-end speed adequate, not good. Right. That's what they said.
And I'm looking another website, NFL.com. I mean, they're saying that here he has a weak side end. Obviously, it's what he played at Illinois, which is an open side end, a guy that was athletic and can run. And they say he's fast and he's athletic, quick off the snap, great burst to close the quarterback. You know, so, I mean –
we don't know what Gene and his staff think.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
these are other people's opinions.
Who you would be ecstatic getting him at 17. You'd be holding your breath at 7. And that's sort of that's sort of where the Jaguars are, to be honest with you. There's a lot of guys that, you know, perception-wise at least, you'd be holding your breath at 7. Now, again, we don't know what they're thinking. I heard somebody say yesterday what's funny about people always talking about best available player is nobody really knows who any of the front offices really have as their BAPs. So we all sit here and judge, and they might have a guy they love at 7, and everybody else is sort of overlooking it. But perception-wise, there's all these guys at 7 that you're like,
So really,
could be, but you're not sure on.
The best available player, though, for this team needs to be Ryan Tannehill at 7 and have a couple of teams that want to come get
him. That would be the perfect scenario.
Yeah, to have him sitting there at 7 with the Dolphins sitting there at 8, knowing you have to get ahead of the Dolphins.
Right.
And that would be the best available
player.
But
again, it would not be a terrible scenario if somebody above you at least want to get him into that 7 somewhere
so
he can drop, or so somebody can drop to him.
All right, folks, we're half hour in the books, 30 more minutes to go. News is next from our friends at WOKV, and we return with Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field here on Jaguars Radio. All right, rolling right along here, Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Fortunato.
You know, today came into the building earlier today, and I was out of town the last couple days. And John, you've been here the last couple days. All of a sudden, the building has come alive.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
It really has. I mean, because, you know, obviously no players were allowed at all anywhere near Everbank Field.
Well, they were here, but the coaches couldn't talk to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different dynamic.
So what is it right now?
The energy level in this place is just, gone up.
They can talk to them, but they can't watch them.
Right. They can't watch them on the field. Ms. Linsky and the staff, the strength coach, can work with them, which is really the key thing. I talked to Tom yesterday, and they're getting, you know, he's getting his philosophy across, you know, doing whatever teaching he does, getting that going and learning the players. And they're able to meet. Meaning the other coaches can meet with the players. They can start talking football. They can't go out on the field and watch them throw or use a ball, but the players can go out on their own and throw.
So the balls are unlocked. Remember when Malarkey said that he had Drew Hampton lock the balls?
Yeah, my knowledge is yes. And so it's finally to the point where if Blaine has a question, he can go down to Britkowski and ask it.
All right. Which is a good thing.
It's great, yeah.
You know, I hope that at some point the league and the union come to some type of common ground on this issue, because not having had the ability to have players and coaches talk to each other and talk football is ridiculous.
Right. Will the union, because the league, I'm sure, will get pressure from the owners and the coaches to do something, will the union be amenable to it?
I think they would be. I mean, players want to get better.
You've got to have something within reason that, and you know Jeff better than I do, you've got to have something that takes the risk of the team wink-winking that you have to be here and forcing you to be here. If there's some language that can be used where the team can't sort of say, well, you don't have to be, but it'd be great,
right?
Then it would work. And I don't know what that language is, but that's the whole key. That's the reason the rules are here, is to keep you from having to keep up with the Joneses.
You know, it's somewhat of a bad PR situation from the league standpoint because, you know, I get it, and that it's, you know, it's collective bargaining, you know, that it's agreed upon. But, you know, there's a lot of fans out there, and fans matter. I mean, they're the ones that, you know, that are paying the freight. Say, well, how come, you know, our quarterback can't talk to the quarterback's coach and the offensive coordinator and start getting better now?
Right. The problem from the player's point of view that I'm not sure they thought about last August was, incorrectly, it makes the players look like they don't want to work. I mean, that's the perception that gets out there.
Exactly.
And that's incorrect because the players do, you know, a lot of the players I talked to were like, well, you know, A, they could watch film on their own, but the problem is you couldn't really ask questions about it. So you couldn't get that interpretation that you would want from your teacher at school, for example. So that
it well, it's created, obviously a bigger deal here because you got a completely new staff.
Sure. But on any staff, I mean, you know, if Matt Ryan wants to ask a question, he should be able to pick up the phone and call and ask a question.
If Tom Brady wants to call Bill Belichick and say, man, I was watching this play and I was thinking maybe we can tweak this play like such and such, he can't do that.
It's silly to not to be able to do
that. If John Fox wanted to know what Peyton Manning was going to do on a particular play, he should be able to call him, right?
Yeah, and it's like you said, it's not the fault of the players.
Right,
you
know, it's the rule.
That's the collective bargaining agreed upon deal, and I disagree with it. There's got to be a way to do it, but still to be able to control the amount of exposure that the player has to injury and on-the-field stuff. I mean, there's a way to be smarter than the way it is now.
Well, the theory, and you may have said it first, Jeff, last fall, was that it got put in during the collective bargaining because it was one of those chips that everybody could agree on, and they kind of said, yeah, great, let's do that. And they didn't really have to give up anything on either side, and they were agreeing on it. But it strikes you as one of those things that last July when they were trying to get this thing done, maybe it was so hectic that they didn't quite think through what it would really look like played out.
Well, and hopefully some cooler heads will prevail, you know, now that, you know, all of that's done.
Right.
And they'll have, you know, a year under this agreement. Then maybe next year they can have some conversation with the union and get a little bit more common ground on some of that stuff.
I haven't heard a whole lot of people on either side arguing against doing what we're talking about. So I don't
know.
I'm not sure why they wouldn't just sort of say, hey, let's figure something out on that.
And by the way, they had the last 2 days some, I guess, media time here at the stadium where they had some opportunities to get some video of players working out, but also Jaguars.com. Video interviews. They've got Tyson Alualu talking about his knee, and then you've got Blaine Gabbert.
It's good stuff.
It's all good stuff.
It was a couple of days because this is sort of the time, and this is sort of the time of year where players have been away for a couple of months and they can sort of come back and you get to talk to them and they can kind of reset their issues. They can, you know, talk about their goals, talk about some of the things that happened last year that maybe they didn't want to talk about. Blaine Gabbert revealed that he had a toe that he was dealing with. And it was funny, some fans sort of wrote into me saying, oh, Blaine shouldn't be talking about that. He's using it as an excuse. This is the time of year where it's okay for players to say, hey, I had this going on, wasn't a big deal, to sort of set the record straight. And, you know, that's what April is for, from my point of view, and the job that I do.
I heard a couple people make similar comments as what you talked about there. No, oh, he's making excuses. No, he's not making excuses. He's just being honest.
Right. Blaine, I mean,
he's the last person
he's
on
a lot
the planet
of things
that's going to make an excuse.
Right. I mean, you know, hopefully that can sort of set that record straight. Not that he needs me to do that, but he's not an excuse-making guy. If he was going to make an excuse, he would have said it last November. And, you know, so probably shouldn't have even brought it up, but it was kind of irksome.
I talked to Tyson Alualu today and said he feels great. A little procedure that he had done on his knee. Thinks that he's going to be great this year. So,
did you ever have that procedure done on either of your knees?
Well, I don't know exactly what the procedure was.
Okay.
So
Yeah.
Wink, wink. You know, so I don't know.
I just know you've had a lot of procedures.
But he said he feels great, and he's looking forward to training. I talked with Evan Britton today, who, by the way, looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Evan looks like an offensive lineman that's ready to go. And he said he feels great. Said the back is completely healed up. Said the shoulder, which, you know, he went into camp with last year having rehab. He said his never felt as good as he's feeling right now.
He's your starter at right tackle?
I think he's going to be there to compete.
And there's a bit of a misconception on Evan. You know, people hear back these days, and rightfully so, red flag, can they ever make it back? Everybody you talk to, the understanding is this is not one of those issues that they think necessarily has to linger long term. His second incident last year was an infection and not a structural recurrence, if that's the right word to use. So, you know, there's a lot of confidence that won't be coming back.
You hope not.
Right. You hope
because,
not.
You know, back when you and I were kind of talking to each other, remember Michael Cheever had a little back
sure.
thing, and all of a sudden, hey, it's no big deal. Well, it popped back
right.
up on him.
Right. So, yeah, that's what you hope. So
you hope it's not something that pops back up again, but he looked great. Looked great. He's a new daddy, too.
Boy, wouldn't it be nice if Tyson can really play 100%? Because – it's funny, the misperception about Tyson. You talk to people inside the building and even outside the building about Tyson, and it's such a disconnect between what some people think and the way he really plays. He's played very, very well, and if he could come in 100% healthy and play as he's capable of,
it would be scary.
You know, what a player he can be.
Well, we saw him one game last year, the preseason game here against the Falcons, where he was disruptive as can be.
Yeah, and the practices with the Falcons, I mean, against his own teammates. I mean, he was just killing people.
And pretty good on one leg.
Yeah.
Yeah,
solid on one leg. But, I mean, you get excited because you know what kind of potential he has if he can be healthy.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the wide receivers in the draft and where the Jaguars may see or where they may be around the time those guys get picked. We'll take this break and return on Jaguars Radio. All right, about 11 minutes left in the show. Brian, Jeff, Joe, John, here with you this evening. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. How many questions to the Ozone do you get concerning the Jaguars and a wide receiver in the first round?
A day? No, I mean, 5-10 a day. I mean, it's a constant. It's a constant topic, and it should be. I mean, it's been an issue, and you know, if I was a fan, I would want a wide receiver in the first round, too.
Clearly, Blackman's the first-round talent that everybody knows, and we've talked about mm-hmm. that. Beyond him, who seems to be a lock? Michael Floyd?
Michael Floyd's a lock, although, you know, as with anybody outside the top 10, there are varying opinions. Some people say he's moving into the top 10 after a big workout recently. And, you know, what I kind of wonder, has anybody had a bad workout during this pro days?
The only one was a linebacker somewhere that had a kind of questionable character and had a terrible workout, but I don't even remember his name.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it seems like every day
they're so well scripted.
The guy has the most unbelievable workout you've ever seen. You know, and it's fine. All these guys should have good workouts. They're elite level athletes, and you know, so I don't put that much stock into a guy's stock rising after the pro day. But what's interesting is there are a lot of guys who seem mid to late first round talents that make you believe that one of them may slip into the second round and be available. So you wonder if that's not a direction they go.
Well,
to add to that, you know, they pick seventh in the first round, but they flip flop in the second round. They get the sixth pick
right.
in the second round, so right. a little higher. Doesn't right. hurt.
Well, right. here's Mel Kiper's for whatever it's worth, and he is still, I guess, the standard. Here are his top five: Blackman, Michael Floyd from Notre Dame, Kendall Wright from Baylor, Stephen Hill from Georgia Tech, and a guy that I think everyone thinks is clearly a second-round talent, Brian Quick. So I've seen on a lot of these mock drafts all four of the first four, Blackman, Floyd, Wright, and Hill, in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing it's safe that three of them at least will be picked in the first round.
You'd think. And then Alshon Jeffrey of South Carolina had a good workout. He's a guy whose stock had slipped from the first round to second round because they thought he was slow. He had a great workout, which they all do.
Great time.
So,
that was what everybody wanted on him. Was
right,
time.
So he came back in. And then what will happen with him is scouts will realize that what they saw was that he played slow. That's what concerned them in the first place. So he'll probably slip back a little bit, and you know, he could be available in the second, you know, in second round if that's what you're looking for. And there are a lot of guys right at that late first, early second round level.
Which means projection. To me that there's a lot of talent in the later part of the first round and the early part of the second round, which mm-hmm. I go back to saying it again.
Yep. Told you.
The best position that you can be in is from the middle to the bottom half of the first round, and then if you can find a way to move back into that range and then acquire an extra pick in the sure. second round, that is as good as gold.
Right. Now, the other factor, and it's something you got to caution everybody, mid first round wide receivers and early second round wide receivers are usually not going to come in and change your offense immediately. You know, they're not going to be
AJ Green
who catch 85 balls for 1,100 yards. They're going to be guys who come in and catch 47 balls for 750 yards, which I hear people out there right now saying, well, we take that, but it's not necessarily going to be a game-changing guy that the defenses shift for in the first year. And that's just kind of the reality of it.
You had brought up a good point earlier in that.
That's rare.
And Brian had asked the question about this, and that if you had A.J. Green and the guy from Atlanta, Julio Jones, if you had those two guys in the draft, where would Blackman be ranked amongst, you know, them?
Probably behind those two, because I'm not sure people think that Blackman has – Julio Jones' speed, which I think is really what brought Julio Jones up.
Would Michael Floyd even be a thought
in
the first round?
The point I was making was if there was a A.J. Green in the draft, would Blackman be considered a top seven pick, or is he in that top seven because he's the best wide receiver? I don't know the answer to that.
I know it's a crystal ball business, but you saw him, right, in his final game in that bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
Where Blackman was just the dominant player
right.
on the field. I mean, that has to count for something.
It does. But, you know, the question you ask is, was he the dominant player on the field because he was playing against college players, and does that translate?
And that's
always
the ball business.
Right, that's always the question. And I don't mean to sit here and, you know,
played big in the Texas
slam
game.
On Blackman.
No.
He made big plays in big games.
You bet.
And that's,
against Texas A&M, he was a monster.
And that's not a bad thing. But sometimes wide receivers who do that have trouble separating and making that NFL-type play, and that's the concern.
The red flag is Reggie Williams. I watched Reggie Williams when he was at Washington.
Sure.
Big play after big play, leaping over defenders. I watched him in a late game against Texas Tech his
right.
senior year, and I thought, holy cow, look at that guy. He's going to be a great NFL player. So
usually
again,
if you can't separate in the NFL, that's
not
good.
Right. And that's where the projection is. 355-NFL-1. Lee is in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Lee. How are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. a couple of quick comments. First, I hope Mojo's listening. Congrats to Mojo and his wife and their marriage Sunday. Second one is I really am hopeful that Aaron Kampman can get back healthy and make the team and provide leadership on the field as well as off the field.
Me too.
And I guess that you already talked about wide receivers. I'm one of those that think that is a dire need, almost to the point of moving up. So I'll take it off the air. Thanks, guys.
I think I can say with it, and I have no particular knowledge, you can be certain they're not moving up to get a receiver.
No, I mean, ideally they move back, but I would be stunned if they move up from 7.
Yeah.
Two spots to get a player that people, you know,
are unsure about.
Are unsure about. If A.J. Green was there, if Charles Johnson was there, then I say maybe you move up because those guys.
You mean Calvin Johnson?
I'm sorry, Calvin Johnson. Who did I say?
Charles.
Okay, right. I'd move up to get Andre Johnson.
Yeah.
But, you know, but.
Who was the third pick in the draft?
If there was a guy like that where you knew going in, everybody was saying no way they miss, then maybe you move up. There's just not that vibe on Blackman. I'm sorry, Jeff.
No, I just took a call from somebody, from John. And he was saying that he thought the best chance they had to trade would probably be with Cleveland. What do you think of that?
Well, for which spot? For their fourth pick or
yeah.
the 22nd pick?
No, probably for
to trade up.
Yeah,
it cost you your second round.
No. You don't trade up. You got the
go
cost
back.
Is too much.
Yeah, I don't. you know, trading up to get a quarterback last year to me made sense because at some point,
it's the only position you would do that for.
You've got to roll the dice and try to get your guy at some point with the quarterback. And they're just, you know, so rare. But to try to move up in the, you know, I just don't think you do it.
That's the only position that you should ever trade up for is
in the first round.
Absolutely.
Right.
Not even defensive end?
No. No, I just, I don't know. To me, especially, you look at what the Redskins paid. I mean, the Redskins moved up into that number two spot.
They gave a world of hurt.
My goodness. I mean, look what the Falcons gave up for Julio Jones. I mean,
I agree. I don't think you go up. No. Well, no. No, because they didn't.
I don't think so.
Yeah, they didn't win in the playoffs.
And they don't have a first-round pick this year.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I don't. That's why I say with certainty they're not going up.
No.
Not for a guy like Blackman's there now. That's a totally different story.
Not enough people believe. I mean, and again, I don't want it to sound like I'm, you know, smashing on Justin Blackman. Not enough people believe that he is a guaranteed franchise changer to trade up for him. Now, do the Jaguars need a receiver? Would he be a good fit? You know, very possible. But a franchise-changing guy, there's a difference between a franchise-changing guy and a guy who's coming in who would be a starter and who would help.
How about Morris Claiborne? I mean, you know what? The news came out. His Wonderlic score was not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, many people thought that he was a top five selection. Does all of a sudden a not a very good Wonderlic score, I believe it was a five. Does that push him down into the Jaguars' range?
You tell us.
Yeah, my understanding is there's a learning disability issue there with Claiborne's score, perhaps, that's not necessarily a
indicative of his intelligence.
Yeah, and regardless of what it is, usually those sorts of things, be they anything like that, a score is usually a piece of the puzzle. If there's two or three things to go with that, then it becomes a huge red flag that might drop a guy down. Most GMs, most people who analyze it, one thing like that is something that they say, oh, really? And they go back and take a look at their overall package. If the overall package doesn't indicate that it's a huge issue, then one thing like that usually does not hurt a guy. And I hope in his sake it does.
So what you're saying, that the learning disability could be that he's not a dumb guy, it's just he did not score well on the test for some
right.
other reason.
And again, I don't know enough about it to speak very intelligently about it, but
so your Wonderlic's not very high either?
No, it probably wouldn't have been. Nothing else was. I don't know why the Wonderlic would have been.
Well, your Q rating on this show is pretty high.
Well, I appreciate the kind.
All right, that'll do it for tonight, folks. Talk to you next Wednesday with another edition of Jaguars This Week.